Under advisement, we move to case number four, which is Madlock versus Van Rue Credit Corporation. Good morning, Mr. Evelyn.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. I have 3 points. The defendant's collection letter was false. The defendant's collection letter was confusing. And this case should not have been disposed of in a Rule 12b6 motion to dismiss. The false statement is that the letter states, quote, Sherman has advised us that interest will continue to accrue on your account as provided for in your agreement with the original credit grantor, close quote. Sherman is a bad debt buyer and the owner of the account. Sherman adds interest, all right, but arbitrarily, not in accordance with the underlying agreement. We know that they add interest from the evidence in the Foster case. We allege that in the complaint. And the reason that they don't follow the agreement is that they pay 2 cents on the dollar for these debts and don't bother getting any of the paperwork. The statement that it is accrued in accordance with the underlying agreement, presumably at a fairly high rate, is false. It is not what they do. In some cases, they charge more. In some cases, less. Under the Gearing decision, a false statement in a collection letter states a claim, and we had a valid claim on that ground. In addition, the letter is confusing. It states a balance. It represents that interest will continue to accrue. It then demands that plaintiff remit the entire balance due. We now know that that number is the number at the top plus accrued interest, which is computed from time to time by Sherman, and that the collectors, such as Van Rue, are instructed to get that interest. Complaint says they add interest. The discovery in the Foster case says they add interest. The defendant has now switched to the form of letter prescribed by this court in Miller and Chuway, which is the safe harbor letter for the case in which the debt is continually increasing and the collector is attempting to collect the continually increasing amount. And at no time has defense counsel challenged the proposition that interest is being continually added. So you have a letter which is, in fact, worse than Chuway. In Chuway, it said a number. It said, remit the balance above. And then it said, to obtain your most current balance information, call an 800 number. The court found it was confusing, even though they weren't trying to collect anything more than the number at the top, because obtain your most current balance information suggested that they were trying to collect more. Here they are, in fact, attempting to collect more. They are not using the language prescribed for that situation at the time in Miller and Chuway, and it is a violation. The district court dismissed this claim because it first assumed, without contrary to the complaint and without anything in the record to support it, that a defendant was in fact only attempting to collect the number at the top. And then it said, well, it's like Taylor. Taylor is actually the exact opposite of this case. In Taylor, there was a table. The table said exactly what the defendant was attempting to collect. Principal balance X, interest Y, accrued interest 0, other charges 0, total balance a number equal to X plus Y. The district court, on summary judgment, and that's an important distinction, said that the table made absolutely clear exactly what they're trying to collect, the total balance due, it added up. A statement in the letter to the effect that we may in the future add interest pursuant to contract or statute did not detract from the clarity of the table. It is important to note that there was no allegation in Taylor that the numbers were wrong, that the method of computing interest was not in accordance with law or contract, or that the defendant was attempting to collect 1 cent more than the total balance due that was given. Here we have all of those things. The defendant is trying to collect more than the only number that appears in the letter. The interest is not stated. It is not capable of being computed by the recipient of the letter because it is not in accordance with law or contract, but arbitrary. It is, in other words, everything that was accurate in Taylor is inaccurate in this letter. Finally, Taylor said that they may add interest, which this court said is a truism, since debts by law in Illinois carry interest. Here they say they will add interest. They specify exactly how that interest will be computed, and they don't compute it that way. They do something else. All of this goes to show why the district court should not have dealt with this matter on a 12b6 motion. We asked for discovery. We pointed out that we were getting information in the Foster case that supported our various claims. We were not permitted discovery. The court proceeded on a totally erroneous assumption that all they were trying to collect was the number at the top and they would never try to get a cent more. And it clearly should not have been disposed of on a 12b6 motion. Unless your honors have some questions, those are my comments.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. Mr. Schultz.
Good morning, your honors. Counselor. Plaintiff brings his claim under E and G, two separate sections of the statute, and this court has dealt with those two separate sections differently. The E portion of the claim has to do with the character of the debt, and the G portion has to do with the amount of the debt. And plaintiff admits that the debt is twice stated, but claims that the statement "pay the entire balance due" somehow misstates the amount of the debt. As to the G violation, like I said, it says twice the exact amount, the exact same amount that's being sought to be recovered in this letter. It has a single date on the letter, no other date as far as payment. It asks for the entire balance to be paid. The statement of the debt amount is clear. It's consistent with the letters that this court approved in Olson, Taylor and Schlett's case, and with the directions this court gave in the Chue case. And there's basically four cases on point. The Miller case that started this about 4 or 5 years ago, then in the last year, Chue, the Taylor Schlett's case, and the Olson case. The presentation in this letter is actually clearer than in those other cases, and Mr. Edelman touched on the presentation in those letters. The Schlett's, Taylor, and Olson letters are attached in the record as a response to our motion to dismiss. And as stated in those, in the Schlett's and Taylor case, they had the principal balance, the interest, and total balance. And then, interestingly, in Schlett's, they were actually asking for a payment of a lesser amount than what was stated in there. Similarly, in Olson, they had the balance amount, and then they had another amount, a now due amount. And they were asking for a different amount, a lesser amount. In both of those cases, this court analyzed the situation under a G violation and found that the debt amount was stated sufficiently clearly not to be a violation of the law. The letters also in Taylor and Schlett's, those cases were consolidated before the court and decided at one time, had a statement in there about interest may apply to adjust the debt. Again, that language is in those letters and there was no violation. Now, this court has acknowledged there is no need to go further to obtain additional evidence, and that the court can decide the letter violation under certain situations like these. At this point, the court has addressed, as I've said, the G violation on four different occasions. And believe me, the people in the industry read those, carefully try to follow them, and in this instance are following them, and following the directions this court gave. You've developed parameters as to what is acceptable. And it's not as if there's a split in the Seventh Circuit. Judge Posner wrote four of these opinions. Now you have a situation where a judge, like Judge Shader, who handled the Taylor case and this case, can look at what this court has said, based on that precedent, decide whether or not the letter is consistent with that precedent. And that is what he did here. It's preposterous to claim that a case must proceed to evidence and discovery beyond a 12b6 with that sort of precedent. The clear parameters of those cases and the analogy that can easily be made and it falls within those and is actually less confusing than those cases.
Well, when you have the Taylor case, though, that was a summary judgment case and there was an opportunity to present evidence. And
true.
Here there was no opportunity for them to show that the letter was objectively confusing to an unsophisticated consumer.
Correct.
Sophisticated consumer.
Correct. But in a number of those cases did not have such survey evidence. And this court has said there are situations where we can look at this letter and decide it. And now that you've created that precedent, and now you've said what letters are acceptable, and you've talked about how the presentation in this manner is acceptable, it would not make sense to then require, just because a plaintiff claims a violation, a G violation, that you must go beyond to the evidence stage.
that no 12b-6 cannot be heard when the court, when the people are following your precedent, and the courts can look at the letter and the precedent and follow that. And in Chue there wasn't evidence either, but in Chue the court said, in Chue they had a balance in the letter, and the letter said to remit that balance. And the letter, though, went on. The problem with the letter is it went on and then said to get the most current balance, call. It asked for, and it stated that a more current balance can exist, and you should call for that. Now, this court said, so, if the letter had stopped after the please remit sentence, the defendant would be in the clear. And that's what was done here. They did. They stopped after the please remit sentence. They did not ask for a person to call and get a more current balance. They did not say that the person needed to get additional information. It was a clear statement as to what amount they were seeking to recover. There was no request, no statement that further information would be required. Plaintiff also takes issue with the entire balance statement. Now, it's interesting, as I said in the Schletz and the Taylor cases, they had a statement of, you know, here's an amount, but we want X. Here's an amount, but we want Y, both of which were less, and the letters were fine. Here they simply say we want the entire balance paid. That does not confuse the situation. They want the entire balance. This court has talked about idiosyncratic interpretations of these letters. To say that asking for the entire balance is somehow confusing is an idiosyncratic interpretation that this court has condemned. The last comment I'd like to make is addressing the E violation. And I think the Taylor and Schletz cases directly on point in that situation. In those cases, the letter said that if applicable, interest may accrue, may or will accrue. There's a statement like that, which is a statement similar to in this case. And the court said there was no violation in connection with that type of a claim. The court, the court said the plaintiffs have made an alternative claim that is downright frivolous, that the statement we quoted from the Dunning letter is false and so violated E because two of the creditors did not add interest. The letter did not say they would, only that they might. It's similar in this situation. These are credit card debts. The fact that they said that there may be interest applicable is a comment. It's an entitlement. There may be there. It doesn't somehow make it a violation, a false or misleading statement. And this court has said that it's almost frivolous to make such a claim. I have no further comments in connection with the two allegations in this case, and we request that the court affirm judgment for the defendant.
Thank you, Mr. Schultz. Edelman? You have 4 minutes, Mr. Edelman.
Your Honors, both 1692G and 1692E require an accurate statement as well as a clear statement of what the defendant is attempting to collect. Our position is that the defendant is attempting to collect the number at the top plus interest. We have evidence to that effect now. It does not answer that allegation to say, well, the number at the top is clear. It can also be wrong. So that on that ground alone, we are entitled to discovery. We're entitled to proceed to the taking of evidence. In addition, there is nothing in either Taylor or Chue or any other case which says that if you represent in a collection letter the manner in which you are going to compute interest and that manner is false, that is not a violation. If you, for example, represent that you're going to accrue interest at 21%, but you in fact add interest at 25%, I cannot imagine that that is not a 1692E and G violation. We are alleging essentially that. Instead of using a number, they said, we're going to continue applying your agreement, but we allege they don't, and we have evidence that they don't. That's a violation. As for confusion, which is really the only thing addressed by opposing counsel, the fact that the Taylor plaintiff, for whatever reason, chose not to present evidence that the particular presentation in that case could confuse the consumer does not in any way debar us from presenting evidence that the statements in this case are confusing, particularly when measured against the truth, which is that they are trying to collect not the amount at the top, but that amount plus interest, which is periodically calculated and communicated by Sherman, and which Van Roo is instructed to collect. So that the letter is not merely potentially confusing, as in Chuwe, but it does not accurately and coherently state the amount they are attempting to collect. I have no other comments unless there are questions. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Thanks to both counsel.